Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's podcast. You are not just going to like this, you're going to love this because we are talking about boundaries, standards, self-love, beliefs. Every friggin' thing that you think about and you wonder if it's only you, but I'm gonna tell you what, hell no, ladies and gentlemen, it's all of us thinking about these things. So my guest is a brand new friend of mine who I'm fangirling over as soon as we turned on the Zoom because she's so exquisitely gorgeous. So for those of you watching the video, you're gonna see how gorgeous she is. And if not, take a sneak peek. But Terry Cole, welcome to the podcast. Terry, for those of you who might be hiding under a rock or in a cave, she's like licensed psychotherapist, global relationship and empowerment expert. And who doesn't need a little bit of that? And the author of Boundary Boss and Too Much. Terry's been around for over two decades doing this kind of work. She's been married for nearly three decades. She's freaking awesome on her website, on her social media. Terry, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Bella. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we were chatting away and talking about all of the things before we even got on here. And I love Terry. She's a girl like me, direct, straight, get to the point. She's like, just press record and let's just friggin' go. We were talking about being, you know, in your 50s, in your 60s, and how we look, and do we need plastic surgery, and the nips and the tucks, and let's go.
Okay. So what I was sharing before we hit record was that I, in my mid-50s, is really, that was the only time I started even noticing like actual changes. I felt like I looked the same for like decades and decades. It felt that way. And I started thinking, my sister and I, like we each had like a little fund. We were going to save our money so that we could get like a lower facelift because my mother has like a really saggy neck situation where you just have to look at your mom and be like, oh yeah, that's definitely where I'm heading.
Note to self.
Yeah, it's fact. So, but for me, as the time went on and the more I thought about it and the more I contemplated it, and here's the thing, I have plenty of friends who've done it. I have plenty of friends who don't want to do it. I have literally no judgment and no shade. I endlessly reserve the right to do whatever the fuck I want in my life to myself and in any other way. But what I decided was that there was a lot of time and energy and sort of money that I was putting into chasing youth in a way, right? Even though I don't know that I would have said that's what it was. And I had this epiphany and I was like, what if I put that same time, energy, and money into radical self-acceptance and into self-celebration, like seeing aging as the gift and the honor that it is. Because the truth is, I don't wish I was 28. I will be 62 at the end of this month. I'm very happy to be where I am in my life. So it was there was a mindset shift that I had, and it relieved something. Because I remember when I turned 47, my husband is actually a well-known political artist and an artist and goes to war zones and, you know, he's like a visual journalist.
Oh, wow.
He's got a huge career. But he drew me from behind, and it was almost like a character of me naked from behind, but like nice. It was very nice. And it said, and it's just begun. And he had 47 in the middle of it. And I remember saying to him, I would share that on social media, but you have to make a heart instead of the age. Now, I was feeling shame about being 47, which is funny because I'm also not a girl who's had a lot of shame in my life. I don't carry a lot. I process what I need to. And listen, it's not like I've never done things I'm ashamed of. I have, but I handle them. And I didn't like that feeling. And then as I got older and older, I was like, so if you decide to get a facelift, so then if it's something that you don't want to hide, you'll need, because I'm visible enough that people will probably notice, you know what I mean? And if you disappear,
except me.
For like, exactly.
I was talking about how I'm not an observant person about people's Botox and plastic surgery. So if I have lunch with you and I don't notice your thing on your face, please forgive me.
Right. Don't be mad.
You
just look like you to me.
I think you're beautiful no matter what. And that's what I tell everybody. I didn't notice because I just love you.
Right. It's so true. Anyway, the point of that story was, and again, I don't say that what I did is right or what I'm doing is right for anyone else, but I do offer it as a potential pivot from allowing other people and the patriarchy and brands that are making billions of dollars off of us by telling us that we're not good enough. And I think that that's kind of bullshit. And I feel like when I started really thinking about why I was feeling the way I was like, why would I feel that way? And like you, my mother was not, I think I took my mother for her first manicure when she was in her 50s when I lived in the city. Like, so again, back to someone, you know, my mother just, you know, aged naturally and whatever. I think that we have to really look at why do we feel this way about aging? And I want to feel different. I want to be the wise crone. I want to be the elder. I want to be I am a grandmother 7 times over. I have 3 sons and 7 grandkids. Like, aww. Now, I did marry these children because my husband was a widower. So I'm a teeny bit young to have so many grandbabies. But my point is, you look how you feel about the way you look, I really think impacts the energetic vibe that you give off about the way you look. So if we feel ashamed, that comes through. If we feel excited just about being ourselves, that comes through.
Now, if we don't feel good about the way we look, What do you suggest we do? Do we go into this investment of self-acceptance, or do we say, well, F it, if I don't like my neck and making my neck look better is going to make me feel better, then I'm going to go mm-hmm. do that. Like, what is the right thing to do? And is there a right thing to do?
No, because it's very, very unique, just like your fingerprint, right? But I do think that there are some actions that people can take. And being self-reflective, for me, when I started self-reflecting on why I was feeling that way, and I started thinking, could I change my mind about the way that my body and my face and my neck and all the things are aging? Could I change my mind? Could I love the fact that I'm still here doing what I love, writing books and helping people? And I've got my new book, Father Wound, that comes out in October. Like, I have a desire to reach 10 million women around the globe to help them become empowered. Like, I'm so lit up in my life. Why am I focusing on this thing? I'm not a supermodel. I don't need to be gorgeous till the end of time. Like, I've had my time of being young. I love where I am right now. I don't feel old. I feel the same as I always have. But I think that the self-inquiry for anyone who's hyper critical of themselves, I want you to start thinking about yourself as a beloved child, as your beloved bestie. Would you be that critical of your best friend's neck or saggy boobs or flat butt or whatever your problem is with yourself? I remember years ago, and I think this is relevant, when I was first with my husband, for whatever reason, I didn't like my legs. I had a whole big beef with my legs, whatever the hell I thought was wrong with my legs. I never wore shorts. I always wore pants, you know. And I remember when we first started being physical, that my husband made some comment of like, wow, like, you have amazing legs, you know. And first I looked at him like, is this guy goofing on me? Like, I can't even decide
Are
if this
you
is real.
mocking me? Like, is this for real?
Yeah. And he's the nicest dude in the world, so he would never do that. And I thought in that split second, I could have fought for my limitations and convinced him that my legs were disgusting and tell him all the reasons why. Or I've thought, maybe I'll try it on to just see my legs through his loving and lustful lens and leave it there, which is exactly what I did. And I stopped thinking about my legs after that. And that was almost 30 years ago, where I was like, why do you care? Like, he thinks they're hot. Let them be hot. Look at them as hot because he likes them. You don't need to fight for your limitations, as my friend Patricia Moreno used to say. So why do we do that? And the self-inquiry and the self-reflection, if you're feeling very self-critical, is to look at that behavior and say, would I ever treat my favorite sister that way or my best friend that way? We accept the people that we love with their saggy necks and all, right? With their whatever it is. And I follow a lot of people also, Bella. I'm inspired by friends like Paulina Pereskova, who share so much online about aging. And, you know, people are like, bleh, like so judgy. But I love her because she's normalizing. And I myself work hard to not always have this huge light in my face looking great. I do a lot of my reels with no makeup. I do a lot of workout stuff. So a lot of times it'll be me right after a workout because I'm like, listen, I do not want to have to look like this all the time to feel like I'm valuable. And I don't. I live in upstate New York. I wear makeup when I'm filming and mostly not when I'm not. So I'm very fond at this point of my 62-year-old naked face. Like, it's fine. I don't look and think critical things like I did when I was younger. And that can change. But you have to want to mindfully change it because you're so worth, every one of you listening or watching, you are so worth celebrating. And your value is who you are, what
Amen.
You bring, who and how you love. That's it.
I love that. I love that so much. And let's talk about boundaries. And can we talk about boundaries? We can start in general. Maybe you can do a definition. I think sometimes
Sure.
people, especially in the dating world, Terry, get confused between boundaries and standards.
Yep. Okay. So according to Terry Cole, who wrote a whole book on this called Boundary Boss,
For example,
let's just say, I want you to think about your boundaries like your own personal rules of engagement that lets other people know what's okay with you and what's not okay with you. Your boundaries are comprised of your preferences, your limits, and your deal breakers. So they're different things, right? A preference is less important than a deal breaker, but it's still important. And I think a lot of us have been conditioned to try to be like the cool chick and have no preferences and whatever you guys want to do and no fuss, no muss type of vibe. And the reality is that if we're never talking about our preferences, we're not letting the people in our lives really know who we are. So that's going to be our working definition of boundaries.
Preferences, limitations, and deal breakers.
Preferences, limits, not limitations, right? Limits, meaning what you will tolerate. And then deal breakers are like, if it's over that limit, then you go, that doesn't work for me.
I love that. So for example, let's mm-hmm. say, well, we're going to call this a boundary makeover. Somebody goes on a date with a person, a guy, the date goes well. He says, I'll be in touch to plan our next date. 12 days later, mm-hmm. she gets a text. Hey, do you want to go out again? The next time, it's a cancellation in between. And the next time it's 12 days later and the person was supposed to take her out for a hike. And the guy says, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cancel the date because I have a big toe injury.
That person is not interested in actually dating you. They're very ambivalent. So my thought is you could nicely say, you know, I think the universe is conspiring not in our favor. So I think that this is our answer. I wish you the best of luck. Good luck to you. You end it. You go, you don't need to be on this guy's back burner. You haven't even made out with him yet. Like, why are we this ambivalent behavior that he's showing? He's literally showing it to you. And if he comes back and says, honestly, I really am interested. And you could say, you know what is interesting to me? Someone who's really interested has never waited 12 days to contact me. So I need someone who's really interested in their heart and in their actions. So if that becomes you, feel free to keep my number.
I love that. And she responded in a great way. I have two clients that are best friends. And so they both work with us. And so one helped the other write a response that basically said, wow, I hope you feel that you and your toe feel better soon. And I am looking for somebody who's dating more consciously right now, but I wish you all the best with your health and in love and life. And she sent this to me and said, you were on vacation. So I thought this was a good response. I'm like, I think it was a great response. You
Great
wished him
response.
well, and you told him what you were looking for. I want someone who's more conscious and intentional about this.
Because
Boom.
here's the thing, if you don't call it out, we're so afraid to be perceived as a bitch, as controlling, as extra, as too much, as all the hysterical, all the things that, this patriarchal, misogynistic world likes to say we are. But the truth is, you will get what you tolerate. So we have to be very aware, not just in dating, but everywhere. I have my clients do, usually we do, like one of the beginning things we do is, what are you tolerating? So for those of you dating, which obviously this is a Smart Dating Academy, so this is what we're talking about, think about when it comes to dating, what are you tolerating? I remember thinking, before my husband and I got together, I was already in my early 30s. I was not interested in getting married. My parents got divorced. I just was like, I'm going to have a lot of careers. I mean, I had boyfriends, but I really wasn't a girl who was like, can't wait to get married, you know? And I remember getting to a point of dating in New York City where I was like, I would 100% rather be alone in this beautiful, nourishing, luxurious life that I've built for myself with amazing relationships, traveling around the world, very successful, making my own money, friends since 1972. Like I had such a, my life was really not lacking anything. And to be in a relationship with men who I felt like I had to make myself smaller, they were threatened by my career, they didn't want me to curse, they wanted me to wear makeup or not wear makeup, just all this controlling stuff where I was like, get out. Just no. After meeting my husband, because I was so positive that I was in love with my life, kind of the way that it was so easy for me to go into that dating situation with the mindset that if he's my person, I'll know it. So I will say what I want. And I just actually wrote this in the book that comes out in October, where he said, what do you really want? This is only the second date.
He
And
said
I
to
was
you, what
like,
do you really want?
yes. And I said, it was like a monologue for about 20 minutes. I said everything. I want someone who has a funded retirement account. I want someone who owns their own home. I want someone who knows how to get tickets to the opera and the symphony. I want someone who's read a fucking book. I want someone who's had a lot of therapy, not a little therapy, not read a therapy book, has had a lot of therapy and knows themselves. I want someone who would think about getting a second house on a lake because I'm interested in doing that. I want someone who loves to travel. I want someone who would consider having one kid if I decide I want to do that. Like, I just kept going. I got all the way down to the bottom. I want someone who is a good sharer because I love a lot of people. I want all the things. And when I got to the end, I was like, all right, so how does that sound? And all he says, my mellow Pisces husband just says, sounds great. I was like, okay, I guess we can go on the next date. But I never would have done that when I was feeling more insecure about myself, or when I felt like I had to twist myself up in a pretzel or shapeshift to be who I thought the other person wanted me to be? What were they looking for? I was very much a chameleon in my dating life. The guy was into into rap, me too. The guy was into country. You know what I mean? Like I could just wrap myself around anything they were into, not realizing that, of course, when you do that, the other person doesn't actually know who you are. And by the time I had a lot of therapy by the time I met my husband, but I think there's something to be said for when you pour yourself and you pour your attention into self-love and self-consideration and self-care and learning the language of boundaries, it's easier to not want every person to want you. You understand. You know, my husband will say, when you want it bad, you get it bad. And you only want it good when it comes to your love life. So not everyone is going to be your person, and that's okay. And when you recognize that, believe it. I say cut people off early and often, I don't mean too premature, but if someone isn't 12 days in 12 days, that's too many days of uninterest in you.
Amen. Now, Terry, what do you say to women that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and they are strong, they are smart, they are successful, mm-hmm. and they carry with them this belief? Some of them haven't been through therapy, mm-hmm. right? Some have, but it is, I am too much. Mm. Nobody likes me. I work too much. I'm intimidating. And they date from that lens.
Yep. This is unhealed original injuries, my friend. So you are just right. Whoever feels like they're too much for your person, you are just right. So part of it is we have to sort of torch that limiting belief, and we have to understand where it comes from. So I'll give you a quick little exercise that you guys can take with you. It's just a tool.
Love tools.
Love it. When you're dating, if you're getting the vibe that like this person thinks you're too much or whatever it is, or you can bring to mind a relationship or a dating situationship that you were in where you felt that way, you're going to ask yourself these three questions about that person. Who do they remind you of? Second question, where have you felt like this before? Third question, how is this behavioral dynamic, the way you're interacting and the way you're feeling, right? Feeling like too much. I should be smaller. I shouldn't be as successful. It's not feminine. It's not this. It's whatever that's happening. Where have you felt that way before, or where have you seen that before? There's a fourth question that we can ask if those don't produce, right? But they're going to, trust me. The last one is, when I'm interacting, when I'm feeling like I'm too much in the dating world, metaphorically, who do I become? And who does the other person become? So sometimes it's like you become your mother and the person you're dating metaphorically becomes your father. Did you witness this? That women who are laughing too loud or have too much power or make too much money are too much or not feminine or not valuable or not desirable? Because we have to, you know, there's a very famous quote by, what's her name? I think it's Colleen Aubert. I think is her name. That says we repeat what we do not repair.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to repeat these because our smart daters, they like the formulas. They want the method. They want to get better. So when you feel like you're too much, you should ask yourself these four questions. Get your pens out, smart daters. Who does this person remind me of that's making me feel this way?
Yep.
Did I get that right?
Yep.
Number two, where have I felt like this before?
Yep.
Number three, I was trying to write. How is this feeling?
How is the behavioral dynamic, the way we're interacting? So how is the way we're interacting familiar to me? And that, I'll give you an example to make it easier. Because illustrating is just, it's just so much easier with a quick story.
Amen.
So I was at my grad school internship, and there was the guy who was running the place. He was a very fancy author. He was an addiction expert. And I hated this guy's guts. So I was, every time I saw him, I was so intimidated by him, but I was complaining in therapy about it. Such a jerk, so mean, so judgy, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, after like the third week in a row, Bev, my therapist, was like, "Tara, describe this guy again." I was like, you know, 6'2", deep voice. He's got a dimple, Wall Street Journal reading, Brooks Brothers suit wearing, martini swigging, probably golfs on the weekend. You know the type. And then she was like, "Hello, who else would that exactly describe?" And I was like, "Oh my God, my father." She's like, "Correct." So what happens is, and then she said, "Do you know why it matters?" She's like, "Terry, you're having a transference to Dr. Washington because he reminds you of your father." So a transference is when you are reacting in now, being driven by some unresolved something in the past. So this person might not even look like, if you say, "Who does this person remind me of?" They could remind you of a punitive mom. Right? They don't have to look like the person, but something about the quality of the interaction is, yes, they're reminding you of something from the past. And you may be having an amplified response because of that. That's what a transference is. So why does it matter? In my situation, she was like, "Tara, if you turn into 10-year-old you every time you see the guy who owns this therapy practice, how is he going to ever know how smart you are? Don't you want to get a job here when you're done with grad school?" And I was like, "Yes, I do." And she was like, "Well, you're not going to if you run into the bathroom every time you see him in the hallway." And she was right. So what we want to understand with dating, because this is one of the most common places that we play out these unresolved injuries, is always looking. And you can look at the patterns in your relationships. You can do a relationship inventory, like, are you constantly attracting unavailable folks? How is that familiar to you? Oh, I had a father who was a workaholic, who was unavailable. And now you go, "Okay, well, now that I know that, what do I do?" But trust me, bringing this information from the basement, which is the unconscious mind, to the main part of the house, that alone can shift something, because energetically, you're going to be giving off something different when you go, "Oh, I'm believing this story about myself that I'm too much." I call this your racket. And especially with dating, it's like, it's probably a father wound racket for many people, where we have a young experience with our dads. And those experiences, if we do not repair them and figure them out. When I say repair, I don't mean with your father. I mean within yourself, right? Therapy or just understanding, like, "Oh, I feel this way." We have a tendency to repeat it. So I say we can talk it out or we can act it out, but like it's not going away. So which one would be better? It would be better to talk it out. It would be better to journal it out. It would be better to raise your awareness about, why has this been my pattern in love? Because it can't all be other people, right? Like I used to think before I had a lot of therapy in my 20s, it was really my boss, my boyfriend, my best friend who betrayed me, my this one, my that one. And finally, my therapist was like, "Dude, you are the common denominator in all of these experiences. So what is happening for you? That you know, right? I needed to get boundaries. I needed to be better at telling the truth about how I felt. I needed to stand up for myself in ways that I didn't. But instead, I was like, "Oh, Betty's entitled, and this kid's a jerk, and this boss is an..." You know what I mean? Blaming the others.
And instead, what you learned in therapy was when you feel the paper cut, you establish the boundary. "Hey, that hurt when you said that."
Yep.
And that's exactly what changed everything.
Well, I mean, listen, over time, of course, but what ends up happening is when we realize it's us, it is so empowering.
Amen.
Because right? If it's them, if it's really them and I'm being victimized by them, then there's nothing I can do. Then I'm like stuck. If it's me and I could raise my awareness about what I'm doing, that changes everything.
I love that. So do you recommend people sit with themselves. You said journaling. Maybe they're in therapy, but I believe that there's something profound that happens when we take pen to paper and we actually write things versus just talk about them. I mean, it's two different modalities, right? So do you recommend, hey, sit down and say, what's going on in my life and where am I the common denominator?
Yep, I do. And you know, the way that I teach myself, like all of the books that I've written and all of the stuff that I teach, I always have exercises that will bring you, because I'm not like anybody's guru, right? I don't possess the magic. I hold up the mirror so that clients and people in my groups and courses can see their own magic, right? I'm a damn good GPS to get people to the information that they need to transform what is holding them back in life. So it is so valuable to go in. It is so valuable to self-reflect. You know, one of my old mentors used to say that becoming the observer of yourself without judgment, but with radical curiosity, is like the highest we can evolve to. So you look and go, huh, so I was on that date and he said this thing and then I had this experience. I wonder why, or I wonder why I said that. Like, because a lot of times we'll be self-sabotaging relationships when we're dating for a million different reasons. But when you become aware of that, when you self-reflect, rather than judge and be like, you're a jerk, why did you do that? You know, do you really not want to be in a relationship? We treat ourselves with like incredible compassion. Like we're all just doing the best that we can. Like there's no manual. Like nobody showed us how to have healthy love. I couldn't believe, I mean, for years and years and years, love was my pain point. Because I was like, how could I be this smart in all these other areas, this ambitious, this successful, this all the things that I was. But this love thing, it was like this bizarre conundrum that I just always end up over-functioning in the relationship or under-functioning or dating down, whatever the thing was. And it really took that self-reflection that you're talking about, Bella, to have me understand, and therapy and, you know, all the things that I did.
Right. And like you said, once you understood yourself, accepted yourself, had compassion for yourself, and truly loved your life, everything shifted. And then you could go through all of the things you wanted when your husband asked you without feeling like you had anything to lose, without feeling like you had to shapeshift for him.
Exactly. And the thing about self-love, let's talk a little bit about self-love and self-consideration and the difference between, because I think that there's a lot of stuff out there in the interwebs. People love to be like, just love yourself more, as if.
Go get a facial. I'm like, that's not self-love. That's self-care.
Yeah, man. It's also not helpful. There's no platitudes that actually work. So I talk about self-consideration because being a therapist for almost 30 years, I can tell you that self-consideration is more of a way of life than it is a mani-pedi. And mani-pedis could be part of it too. Yay, I love them. But it's self-consideration is, so I'm going to give you two questions that you guys can take with you. Before you agree to anything in the dating world and beyond, you're going to ask yourself, especially this is for my overfunctioners. One, do I have the bandwidth to do this without becoming resentful? Number two, do I even friggin' want to do it? And I feel like a lot of times, especially with highly capable women, because that is my clientele as well, we feel, and highly codependent, my people are high functioning codependent. So it's very hidden. The codependency is just competency is what it comes off as, you know? We think if someone else wants us to do something and we're like good girls because we were raised to be that way, and if we're nice people, we should do that thing. And I'm saying we should answer these two questions first. And if you have family and friends and people, obviously you are going to do some things you don't friggin' want to do in life, because that's called being in a civilized society. But there are times when we are people pleasing low priority people in a way that is not required of us, and the cost is great. So if you can run anything you're considering doing through these two things, because another thing, like when we think about dating, right? If someone is, you're going to have a date and it's your first date and you live in Queens and they live in Brooklyn and they're picking a place in Brooklyn, even though you live in Queens, you really need to go, do I want to go to Brooklyn when I live in Queens and be getting home late on the train or taking it? Like, no. And it's already, that's a lack of self-consideration on your part to agree to do that. You know, so you can say, hey, I am interested in going, but I would like to make a simple request that you find a restaurant near where I live, because I don't like the idea of traveling back by myself. And if that person, there's two ways that someone can respond to that usually. Either they can be like, oh, defensive and stupid. Okay, so that tells you something about them, where they're like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize you were such a princess, let's just say. So that is a red flag that you're wagging right now. I love it. Or they can sincerely say, oh my God, you're so right. I was so excited for you to take you to this Italian place that I love. You're so right. It is not correct for me to ask you to come here. So I will happily find a place near you. If you have one that you love, feel free to tell me it. And if not, I'll find it. Like, if someone has that, because sometimes men are a little bit clueless. They can be. It's not always selfishness and thoughtfulness. But here's the thing. It's your job to make sure that others consider you. Your job. And when they don't, it's your job to say, hey, I will be considered because I consider myself. I'm not getting on the subway at 10:30 at night by myself or paying for a $50 Uber, more, whatever. Like, you have to know yourself. So anyway, I don't even know. What long way around the barn to get back to something, but hopefully that was helpful.
Well, we were talking about self-consideration.
Yes, we were.
And I love that. And I love, you know, I've made those mistakes of being the pleaser, right? I'm the firstborn daughter of immigrants, right?
Oh my God. A Pisces. You got it bad, dude. You got it bad, sister.
Okay. And so I have become much more vigilant in the last couple of years, kind of since COVID. I can really remember the inflection point moment where I said, oh, can I send you dinner? And this person I barely knew was like, yeah, that'd be great. And I was like, how weird that they said yes. And I said, how weird of you, Bella Gandhi, to ask someone out of knee-jerk good girl response, oh, you're sick. I barely know you. I've just met you. Can I send you and your family dinner? And she said, yeah, that'd be amazing. And I was like, my mom was like, that's so weird. I mean, she shouldn't have said yes. I said, no, self-responsibility. I did it out of being the good girl. And now I'm resenting it. And at that moment, and I sent her the dinner and I chalked it off to, you know what? This was a great life lesson today.
Exactly.
And now I think before I offer.
Yes. We need to give ourselves time. Like, I feel like a lot of us, because we're women who are getting something done in life, that everything is quick. You need this. This is how you do it, right? We're the auto advice givers. We're the ones who are, you know, telling, you know, everyone what they need to be doing. We've got it all covered. And slowing down is such a gift to your nervous system, but also to the quality of your life, because you don't have to give anyone an immediate answer. And if someone pressures you for one, you can say, I want to think about it. I'm not sure how I feel about it. Do we not have the right to think? Of course you do. And no one can do that for you, right? You have taught people how to treat you. And now it's time to maybe teach them something different. I used to be the immediate get back to people type of person all the time, all the time. I used to always have my phone on. I mean, that's been many, 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 many years. People always complain because my phone is always on silent. And here's the thing, Bella. I don't give a shit. You cannot like it. I have a very sensitive nervous system. I don't want my fucking phone ringing. That is my choice. If you text me, I'm very much on it. The moment I can get back to you, I will. You're not getting me more. And my mother's like, well, your sister Kathy is going to be my emergency because your phone is never on. I was like, good. Let someone else do something.
Glad you have someone.
That's right.
Go, Kathy.
Go to it. I mean, I've been the hero child for decades. And about 15 years ago, I was like, no, man, because this is a thankless position. I still do plenty. Don't get me wrong. But I also know I'm not the only capable one when I have three older sisters.
Oh, right? Wow.
Uh-huh.
Are you the baby?
I am, but it's called, I took on the designated oldest child role. So like you, that was my position in the family.
Mm. Okay. Wow. And that's harder. Mine was given by position, by being the firstborn, but yours is more of a transformation.
And here's the thing, though. My sisters didn't care. So, you know, I know a lot of people have, you know, sisters and they fought and they did this. I had sisters that loved me to death and still do, like to death. Everyone thought I was the best thing that ever happened to everyone. And so there is a responsibility that goes with being the first to go to college, the first to go to, only one to go to grad school, that all the things that I did, and I felt like I had to share it with all of them at all times because I didn't want to be excommunicated from the tribe, you know? And it took years of therapy for my therapist to be like, Terry, you have earned all of this. Everyone's making choices. No one expects that from you. That's you feeling guilty for being successful because I want like family vacations I want to pay for and I want to, you know what I mean? All those things. It's a
lot. You feel guilty.
Yes. And we don't need to.
Gosh, I love this. Are there, you know, any tips that you can give? I know you are so full of things. I was just down rabbit holes watching your videos. Tell us, are there things that you feel like, I want to tell you guys this because this is going to help you be better?
Yes. I want you to be aware of your overfunctioning ways. If you are a high-functioning codependent, which is someone who does all the things for all the people, you're an overfeeler. When your friend has an emergency, I want you to check your urgency. How quickly is that friend's emergency on your to-do list? Like where you're like, the over-responsibility for everyone. Because this will get in the way of you dating the way that you want to and of you partnering the way that you want to. Because what happens is we use our overfunctioning ways to get into relationships, but then we're trapped in the overfunctioning. And I used to say, like, kind of as a joke, like in my 20s, I could take a perfectly capable boyfriend and turn him into an underfunctioner in 2 weeks or less, right? Because I was so quick to be like, I got it. I already made the resi. I already did the thing. Like, it's all, everything is fine. So you're being highly capable is an amazing quality. And it doesn't mean that you should do everything. And I want you to think about learning to become a better receiver. Allow people to do things for you. Ask for help. You deserve support. And I think that the hyper-independence that can come with this crew, and of course, I say this crew, that's my crew, and that's who I was, and probably who you are too, Bella. It's something that really blocks intimacy. Because in order to have intimacy, we have to have vulnerability. And in order to have vulnerability, we have to allow people to do things for us. When I first started dating Vic, he would want to drive from New Jersey to pick me up on West 68th Street and then drive back to New Jersey. And I would say to him, well, that makes no sense. I'll just go to Penn and it'll take 20 minutes, you know. And my mother was finally like, Terry, why are you stopping? Because he was so cute. He'd be like, let me come scoop you up. Like, how sweet, so romantic, you know? And I was all like, data-wise, that makes no sense. And my mother was like, Terry,
we're about efficiency. We're alpha.
We are. And she really changed it. She said, why are you denying him the joy that it brings him to make your life easier. You do it for everyone else. This guy loves you. Let him take care of you. And I started to. And then, of course, it's very terrifying when you're an alpha woman, letting anyone do anything because you're like, they're. When I finally got to the point where I realized he could be trusted about a year in, for about 6 months, I was convinced he was going to get run over by a bus. I was like, oh, he's definitely going to die now, for sure. Like, he is definitely dying.
Because he's nice.
Because I can trust him. Because I allowed myself to be vulnerable. So I think the vulnerability thing is something that we do slowly, right? Because we don't want to have that vulnerability hangover. But the only way you're going to get there is allowing other people to do for you, because this is how we attract and curate mutual relationships where there's interdependency instead of hyper-independence or codependency.
I love that. Let them give.
Let them give. And you must receive with gratitude. It's okay. Just fucking say yes. Just say yes to whatever it is. My mother also said something that I think could be helpful, that when you reject a compliment or someone's kind gesture towards you, it's like they're handing you a blue Tiffany's box and you're swatting it to the ground and stomping on it. Would you ever do that? And the answer is you would never do that. So think about, because receiving compliments is also a skill, and it's important to be able to say, someone says, "You, that presentation was amazing." And instead of telling them the two things that were wrong about it, you say, "Thank you so much. I worked so hard, and it makes me feel so happy that you liked it." Let people give. Let people give to you. I also have a gift for your people, because I love gifts. So for your highly capable folks, which is pretty much everybody listening to this, I created, and it's called Do Less Training. So it's sort of how you can have more peace. And it's all about boundaries as well. But it's like doing less by having better boundaries. And there's also, I have a boundary quiz there. If you want to know what is your archetype, how do you personally relate to boundaries? And it's just boundaryquiz.com. But anyway, you're going to get your gift at terrycole.com/HFC for high functioning codependent.
That is so generous of you. We love gifts at Smart Dating Academy. Same. And you are a gift.
Oh, thanks, friend.
Thank you. And where can people get more Terry?
Oh, well, I have a community, which we meet weekly, and just I answer all your questions personally, which is terrycole.com/TCM for Terry Cole membership. I have a podcast I've had for 10 years. I have a YouTube channel with, as you know, 800 free videos. I do a lot of free stuff. I have paid stuff too. I have masterminds and a whole bunch of other ways that you can work more closely with me. But I'm really dedicated to evening the playing field a little bit for people all over the world, that I feel like mental health is a right, that we all have a right to have access to what will help us have happier, healthier lives. So you can find all of that on my YouTube channel, which just search my name anywhere. It's just Terry Cole. And I hang out mostly on Instagram.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to be hanging out more on Instagram in the coming years. So
please do.
I will. And I would love to hang out with you.
Please do. Please come.
All right. Well, smart daters, there was so much packed in this. You know, go for a walk. Sit down with your notebook. Have a look in the mirror. Love yourself. Be kind to yourself. Like Terry said, look at yourself as the little 3-year-old version of you with that love, that tenderness, and that radical acceptance.
Yes.
And tenderness, right? And I leave you with that. You are beautiful. We love you. And take that with you. If nobody's told you this week, I love you, I love you. So until our next episode, I bid you farewell.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.